When we do all of the light work, we are also lighting up the shadow. So the truth is, light work is shadow work and shadow work is light work. And I don't know if you've ever thought of this before, because I hadn't before this episode, but the truth is, when you can give your shadow a seat at the table and integrate it, it can become wisdom that you can share with others.
Hey, softpreneur, there's magic happening right now because you're here with us and we are well met. We're Elisa Jakim and Don Petrin, and we help the wellness industry's most disruptive thought leaders express their essence louder and prouder to create more profitability and possibility. And now it's your turn.
I loved this episode with my dear friend Ishta Devi so much. Ishta is a clinical counselor and hypnotherapist, amongst so many other things. And today we really dug into, what is trauma? How does it show up in the body? How can, you know, as an entrepreneur, how might you be traumatized by your work? As I mentioned at the beginning, Ishta really imparted this beautiful wisdom that when we integrate our shadow, it becomes wisdom. And we also heard of her, like, 20 plus year journey as an entrepreneur, and how she went from, you know, single young mother to tea shop owner to hypnotherapist. So dig in. We can't wait to share it. Yay. Welcome back, everyone, to Softpreneur. Today we have my dear friend Ishta Devi. I have known Ishta so long, I almost can't remember when we met, but I'm pretty sure I was serving her sushi in downtown Kelowna. And we have been through many lifetimes since that time. When we first met, she had just opened up a tea shop in Kelowna called Chai Baba, that's still alive today, although has a new lovely owner, Crystal. And Ishta is also, I think she was like amongst the first round of yoga teachers to be initiated in, I guess, the Kripalu lineage in the Okanagan Valley. I also play that kind of yoga. And since then, she has done so many cool things. Some of my favorite things includes like Shakti full art, just these beautiful pieces that are like, it's like painting, but it's also dance at the same time. We sat in a medicine ceremony together and had already known each other well, but knew each other much, you know, more intimately after that. And these days, Ishta lives and works as a clinical counselor, a hypnotherapist, and really just like a magical healer of all kinds. Yeah. So Ishta, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much. And I also led a workshop at your yoga studio when you owned a yoga studio. That was another lifetime we had together.
Totally. Yeah, that's true. I think it was in the first year of the studio, and that was the first time that you had like ever ran that workshop, which ended up being like these days a pretty large part of your work. And that was actually nine years ago, I think, 8 or 9 years ago that we did that. And I remember we kind of like, yeah, it was a little bit of like an initiation with each other as we were doing it. So yeah, just so grateful to have you in my life. And always, I'm so happy when we get to dance together and just like play with our friends. And as you know, because you've listened, the first question we always ask everyone is, do you have a spiritual practice? And is there anything you would like to share about it?
Yes, I do, of course. I mean, that's why I'm here, right? Because the people that you have on your show integrate that aspect of their life into everything they do. So like all of your other guests, the answer is yes. And what do I want to share? Well, it changes. You know, there's things about it that are always the same and that remain as like steady things. Yoga obviously is a big part of that. Prayer, meditation, inner contemplation. I like to start my day with a sadhana practice each day. And lately that has been looking like waking really early in the morning. Of course, it's October now, so the sun isn't coming up super soon. And so I usually wake around like 5:36, light a beeswax candle. Coffee is always a part of my morning ritual. So I make a coffee very ceremonially. And this morning I actually had a bulletproof. I love me an Americano every morning, but like sometimes you have to add some fat to that. It's pretty pretty important part of what I do in the morning. And then I have recently been recording hypnotherapy little like recordings for myself, and also been doing that for my clients. And basically just saying all the things that I'm becoming and that I'm stepping into, and just like repeating it again and again in different ways and in like all the aspects of my life, all of the expansions that I'm coming into. And I like just, it has like Byronial beats to it, and I make it like super long, like an hour long. And sometimes I'll listen to it more than once. And as I listen to it, you know, I have my coffee, I say my prayers, I kind of go in and out of it. Sometimes it's in the background, and I have like my journal open, and I'm like a little bit writing my journal. And then I flow into some movement. Maybe I do some like booty shaking and like just some body shaking, especially when, yeah, like cause as I'm listening to this information coming in, like, you're so creative, you're so expansive, you're in abundance, you're quantum leaping, like all of my like highest desires, I'm like speaking to them, right? And as I'm listening to myself saying this to myself, obviously things come up where I'm like, I still don't believe that, like, or I'm struggling to like receive that into my life. So when that comes up, then I go into like inquiry, and sometimes even doing a bit of shadow work. And it's a really nice time to be doing that in the morning, what before the sun is up, really just sitting with those parts of myself that are in conflict, and creating space for them to be, you know, like not trying to like just get away from them, and only being like, no, like, you know, like toxic positivity, like everything is perfect, because it's not, right? And so I give that time for myself also, like if there's, you know, if I'm having some drama in my life, or I'm having some like sadness or feelings that are difficult, I let them come up at that time in the morning. But at the same time, I'm always going back to what I know as true, like ultimately, because all of those things are really, you know, that fear or doubt or shame or those shadowy kind of emotions and thoughts that arise are not really in alignment with my true nature, right? Like they're real as they are, but they're not like the ultimate truth of who I am. So I give them space, and I give them a seat at my table, and try to bring compassion and inquiry and curiosity to them. But ultimately, I do in my morning spiritual practice want to come back to knowing who I am. And so like, maybe you've heard Joe Dispenza say this, but like he's all about like doing your meditations until you're really in that felt sense of what you're manifesting, of who that is, into like that high version of your higher self that you are on track to become, and you really feel and embody that. So I really try to get into that sense of self before I move into my day. And so there's a lot of things that can take us there, right? Like, so like my movement practice, or like when those shadowy aspects come off, I shake my body and I shake it off, and I shake that program out of my body, if that makes sense. And then I bring in some breath work, and I integrate once again, like, no, I know who I am. Like, I know, you know, that I am this spark of divine light that is called forward to come into the world and serve in this particular way, or all, not even in a particular way, but like in different ways. And some of the ways I don't even know, like that I'm either doing or that I'm going to be doing, they're just coming through me and just opening my divine channel. And I really try to condition that into myself, into my consciousness, and into my body, and into my alignments, like as I'm doing my sun salutations and just carefully placing my hands and my just stacking my joints on one another, and really just integrating that alignment of being in my truest, most authentic, most healthiest alignment. And so that's, and I sprinkle that through my day too, you know, cause it comes up all the time. It's like, no, like check myself. So I feel like my spiritual practice is really about checking myself through the day, but starting off with like at least a couple hours of like really getting into that. And it's my favorite time of the day. I don't want it to end. I really don't want to like go and step into like getting things done or, you know, doing those kind of like system things, you know, like paying bills or like doing bureaucratic things or whatever. Those are like my most, but, you know, by doing that morning practice, it helps me to bring that sort of, you know, all being in aligned action in a state, in a flow state, and like it, and letting, you know, like that divine energy as well as my own creative energy, like move through me into those mundane tasks. Cause they are like, I'd rather honestly just be doing that morning practice like all day. Don't make it stop.
Oh man.
Don't make it stop.
Us too. We speak about that. Like, what would we be doing if we weren't doing like marketing or hanging out on Zoom together? And it's like, yeah, we'd be like doing healing and spiritual practices and having a healing and spiritual retreat and all that jazz. And we think it's really cool to be able to like also take that into the work that we do, right? And that's like a beautiful part, I think, about like the softpreneur experience. I have never experienced hypnotherapy other than I guess like through 2B magnetic stuff. What about you, Elisa? Have you ever done the hypnotherapy thing?
Yes, and it's been a minute, but when I was working as a healing practitioner, being as a healing practitioner at Maha Rose, I went to in New York City, I went to a few group hypnotherapy sessions, and then yes, through 2B magnetic as well. But I'd so love to hear, because that was about 10 years ago, what it looks like when somebody does hypnotherapy with you.
Yeah. Well, hypnotherapy can look a lot of different ways when it comes to like once you are in that theta state and like the types of things that you can do when you're in theta state. But essentially, hypnosis is being in that state of theta brainwaves. So coming out of the waking state and going into that space that is in between wake and sleep. And when you're in that space, your conscious mind steps aside and you have access into your subconscious mind, the realms of your subconscious, which is 90% of the mind, they say. So it's a really it's basically your storage system of all of your beliefs, all of your memories, all of your thoughts, everything that you've ever experienced and believe. And so you can go in there and do all types of surgery. So yeah, it's really powerful. For sure.
Can I start you again at you can go in and do all kinds of surgery?
So you can go in and do all types of different surgery when you are in that having access to your subconscious mind. And it obviously it's better if you have a guide there, but you can go in with a recording or even in a group hypnosis state or space. When it's like a little bit more of a generic work, you know, like where it's a guided process and you just kind of listen and go on the journey with maybe options that you can. So for example, someone might say, you know, like find yourself like in 2B magnetic. She's like, find yourself on the top of a mountain and standing before you is your future self or something, or your inner child. And then you can have a transaction that is unique to you with your inner child. Maybe bring your inner child into your heart, give it what it needs, the kind of support and love maybe that it didn't get when it was back in the day, when you were actually a child doing that type of work. You can also, like say if you're working one-on-one with someone, you can do more like a work that is more customized to what you need at that time. And you might have a go in with a goal, or you might go in just with curiosity, like you want to explore what is there. So yeah, it's a journey that you can do.
I'm curious about the link between this and manifestation, specifically what you mentioned in your morning practice about really like that being a journey of being who you are or who you know yourself to be. And As a little bit of a side note, I've often thought of myself as like a very non-specific manifester. Mostly what I want is to like embody like joy or be in the state. Like that's the top of my bucket list when I'm doing. So for you, I'm just curious, like is that what you're ultimately, does that feel like what you're manifesting or cultivating, how to be like connected to the truest version of you all day, every day, / like, what does it look like with trying to call in specific things or goals? I'm so curious.
Right. Yeah. So the one that I was listening to this morning, it has a little bit more general sort of felt sense of how it feels to be in that sweet spot of where you feel like you're tuning into your divine expression and or in your dharma, you know, like it could sound something like this, like you are powerfully connected to your divine source and your highest self. You can hear their guidance anytime you need. Like your life feels so expansive. You are so inspiring. Celebrate how amazing your life feels right now. There is so much gratitude for the way that you move from your heart in all that you do, in all your relationships and all your connections. It feels so good to follow your divine guidance, and you do every day. It feels so nice to be like the best mother, the best parent, the best partner, the best friend. You're constantly realigning to your highest expression, like stuff like that. Or like in mine right now, I'm basically saying like, you feel safe with men. You have the most beautiful relationship and maintain your autonomy with your king, and you feel protected, you know, like stuff like that, that's more specific to what I'm calling into my life right now. And then you can even get even more specific if you want. I have been creating these for my clients, and some of them are pretty specific and some of them are also pretty general. There's always at least a little bit of more specificness, and it is good to use it because, you know, for example, like I was speaking to my morning practice this morning about how sometimes some resistance comes up. So to that particular one that I mentioned for myself about like manifesting a partner in my life, I've been single for 10 years now. So that feeling isn't familiar to me. Right. So I'm just like, what does that even feel like? Like, I don't, you know, so, and then there's a bit of a resistance. So I kind of work with like soothing that part of me and being like, it's okay to open to this other experience that you maybe you don't know yet, but what could it feel like? And try to like feel it in my body. So
that sounds so much, Elisa, like your practice that you did right before you called in Jabari, your husband.
Yes, absolutely. And it's funny because I was single like most of my life. Like I never had a serious relationship until I met Jabari when I was 27. And it was really cool because I feel like there was this period in my like in my singledom where it became like one, so fun, like fully embracing the fully embracing the singledom, but also like I did have this process, and I wrote a whole article about it for the Numinous that was like, so maybe we'll link to it in the show notes, but it was about like imagining being held by him like before I went to bed, or like having almost like conversations with this person that I knew was out there, or making declarations like I believed in big romantic love. And I loved reading fantasy novels growing up that were romantic in nature. Like there was fantasy magic, but there was love, you know, there was romance. And romance is still my favorite genre, probably. So I have like really ridiculous tastes. But anyway.
Love.
Like I'm kind of like a film nerd and snob, but I love a good rom-com. Those are like what I would watch any day.
Gives us oxytocins for sure.
I was like returning to these fantasy novels and making these declarations like, I truly believe in love. Like I believe there is a love out there for me. I am going to be willing to kind of have that open heart that I think a lot of us lose, like when we feel like we've lost innocence, et cetera. But it was like this whole process of like radically believing that something else was available for me and saying no to all these wrong men in my life too. There was like a test phase as well.
So this actually really makes me think about like the entrepreneurial journey and business and how like, you know, if we haven't ever felt really successful, it can be really hard to imagine it as a possibility for ourselves, right? And so good to have like expanders, like we have like our friend Shanti, like Kelly Brogan, you know, like really cool people. But also like, I feel like so many business people, like we're going out there and we see people like Amanda Francis or something, you know what I mean? People who are like so far ahead of us that we think we could like never do it. And until we have like, this is like why I think it's so important to celebrate the small wins. One of the reasons I think it's so, so important to celebrate the small wins in business, because you really need to like anchor in that feeling of like, okay, I did it. I put something out there. We have a couple of clients who are just launching courses for the first time. And like, you know, it's like at first you're like, I'm going to launch and I'm going to have six figures and it's going to be evergreen. And I'm, you know, and then it's like, right, I don't even have a following and I have to like put it all together. And so I guess I would love, Ishta, you've had a long, like 20 years probably of being an entrepreneur. Can you like just, you know, give us an abbreviated sort of storyline of, you know, from the tea shop to where you are now? And if, like, if you have to do those spiritual processes, if you have to do like that, hypnotize yourself even before you knew about hypnotizing in order to like believe in the possibility. Or I think that when we don't believe in the possibility, we don't see the possibilities that are like right in front of us. So yeah, I wonder if you could give us a little just for the listeners who feel like, oh my God, my business is never going to do anything. I just love to hear a little bit of your journey.
Yeah. Well, firstly, I would love just to speak to what you're saying about like the hypnosis and how that can be supportive. I recently have a client have a major up level in her career, and with the support of these hypnosis like recordings that I created for her. And yeah, she's ended up being elected into political office, and she's really stepping powerfully into herself, into her dharma, into the way that she is serving humanity in her career. And so, yeah, it can be really powerful for myself and my story, my entrepreneurial story. Wow, where do I even start? I was single mompreneur, I think that is the term, back way, way back in the day. Had my daughter super young at 20, was a single mom. Didn't make sense to drop her off at daycare and work all day in a 9-to-5 just so I can pay for childcare and like have a little bit of money left over to buy food and shelter. Like it didn't make any sense to me. Not to mention that I am just not cut out to not be an entrepreneur. I'm like, I'm like a circle trying to get plugged into a square hole. It just does not work for me. So yes, plus I am like super creative and I need creative outlets and I need the whole day for that. So I can't be like doing, you know, a job that just doesn't light my soul on fire. Yeah. So that said, I did a lot of, I was doing illustrating for magazines when Zoe was really small. So I got to like draw pictures at home all day. And then as she was going to school, it allowed me to pick her up and drop her off at school, all that. As she got older, I started my store. And I had never had a store. I had never worked in a store, obviously. Right. And the thing that actually made me believe that I could do this was a friend of mine was like, yeah, let's open a tea house. Like she got on board with the idea, but then she left the idea like after. Right. But she got me so hyped, and her belief in me was enough for me to believe in me, just because I had, I guess I like respected her and her opinion so much. The fact that she believed that I could do it, I was like unstoppable. And I went in really naive, like it was my very first business. But at the same time, I did a lot of research and I went to a lot of different like groups and stuff like that of like mentorship things and learning how to write business plans and understanding that there is an approach that you can take that is more foolproof than just like jumping in and being like with a big dream and just thinking that it's all going to work out because you have a good product or you have a good idea. Like you have to have systems, policies, procedures, all of these things to make something like a tea house be able to operate and function. So yeah, that was a really good lesson that I learned. And in that, at that time in my life, I was able to really step into my masculine. I had a lot of energy. I was in my early, just turned 30, probably had the biological age of like a 20-year-old at that time. And I had a very established yoga practice. I'd already been teaching yoga, which is kind of like, you know, it's contract. It's like self-employment essentially. And yeah, I did that for 5 years. I had huge dreams. Like I thought that I was going to become the next Starbucks of tea. And in that journey along the way, I came across a lot of people, you know, out there, different mentors, different people that were interested in investing and helping it go to that next level. And as a cute little thing and, you know, entrepreneur, I was approached by a lot of powerful men that wanted to help me to, or at least I thought, and that, you know, they presented themselves as people that really wanted to help me. And I learned the lesson pretty quickly that as a woman in business, especially if you're cute and young, there you're going to run that risk and you have to be vigilant about, you know, men wanting to like basically just, they just want to like have sex with you ultimately, right? Like, and, but they have a lot of like, so that's just something that happened a lot. And it really was, it was really like discouraging for me because so many times I would be on this roller coaster where I was like, it was like, oh my God, this big dream is going to get realized and then kind of come crashing down and realize, oh no, that's not it. So during a part of that journey was, yeah, was kind of getting these little mini traumas along the way and these evidence that, you know, the entrepreneurship is really fucking hard. And like, and with my perfectionism and everything like on top of it, and a lot of the, like at that time, I hadn't started to really delve into understanding about trauma and understanding all the things that we know now know today. So I had none of that. I was just kind of blindly on this entrepreneurial journey. But like there were so many moments of like just utter despair. And, you know, where, you know, Chai Baba went through the recession of 2008. We had construction on the street where the sidewalk was blocked off. My neighbors were like going out of business. So these are the types of things that happen often, you know, these external events that happen that like really can just really crush your self-confidence if you attach your identity to the success of your business and you make connect yourself with, you know, and your own like meaning of who you are to like where your business is at. And that is also a really big danger on the journey of being an entrepreneur. So that was a big part of it. I did sell it in a time of burnout. I was just ready to move on. At that time, I realized that I had a lot of like, the burnout was leading to me to all these crazy behaviors, including bulimia that I had never experienced before. And I was getting all of these red flags to myself, like, wow, like there's something wrong. There's something deeply wrong going on. And that's when I started to dig a little bit deeper and do some research. And I realized that I had what I thought at the time was PTSD from early childhood developmental trauma. And that was when the journey of like learning about all of this stuff came online, and it became a total obsession for many years. And it's my why behind becoming a clinical counselor and like stepping into this work of providing resources and the work that I do to support people. So their trauma healing journey isn't as awkward as mine. And part of that, also part of that journey, was working with a therapist that was, he basically fucked me up like worse than I was before. And then that layered on like a whole nother layer of obsession of like, I need to like find out what is the most effective way to do this where people can like expedite their healing and be safe, because there was a lack of safety and there was a lack of integration with that work that I attempted to do like right at the beginning when I was like super raw, cracked open, burnt out, like a complete train wreck. I went into working with somebody that just didn't provide a proper safe space, process, and integration that I now can do for my clients. So that was a really big motivating factor as well. But I think maybe I got a little bit sidetracked and a tiny bit off topic.
It was perfect. No, that's perfect. Yeah. And that actually leads me to a question. You said like you thought you had PTSD. I kind of joke, but it's almost not a joke, that I had like PTSD from the lease that I had to pay for Tandava, my yoga studio. Because when people ask, up until this year, so this year, when people ask me, oh, did you love owning a yoga studio? Now I'm like, oh my God, it was so amazing. I miss it so much. But if you asked me that last year, I'd be like, I had an $8,000 a month lease. Like that was like, they're like, do you miss Tandava? And I was like, I had to pay $8,000 a month on a lease. Like, you know, and so like to me, that was, I don't know if it was PTSD or what. So this actually makes me want to ask you, you know, we talk about like capital T and little T trauma. Can you like tell us a little bit about that and if that is even a thing?
Totally. It is a thing. It totally is a thing. And, you know, trauma overall, like we have that, we have the definition of trauma as like, it's an event where your nervous system just can't cope. And it's impressing onto your nervous system a moment of crisis. And I love what actually Gabor Mate says about trauma. He said, like, it's not really the event, it's what's happening in your body as a result of the event. And I totally agree with that. The moment of trauma, like it impresses and imprints like a story into the nervous system and into like your neural pathways. And then later you have the response, and that response just goes on a loop, like ongoing into your life until you address it. So my definition of trauma is taking all of that into consideration, like yes to all of those definitions, but my definition is essentially trauma is the program of separation. It's ultimately separating us from ourselves, and it is on a spectrum. So we can experience trauma on a very subtle spectrum, like, you know, for example, you know, on the farthest end of the spectrum, you know, it could be like experiencing a genocide. It could be experiencing a sexual assault. And on another end of the spectrum, it could be being in a dynamic with someone who is displaying narcissistic traits, who is being avoidant to you, who's gaslighting you. And then with, you know, the various categories of trauma, there's trauma that's compounding over time. So all of those little acts of that, say in that dynamic, for example, of someone being like subtly manipulative to you, controlling you, micromanaging you subtly, or, you know, just kind of making you feel a little bit like shit every day. Over time, that's going to compound into a bigger trauma, because it's separating you from your truth. It's separating you from the truth of who you are, separating you from your birthright of knowing who you are, knowing that you're safe, being, having the right to regulation. And so trauma will separate us from ourselves, and then that fractalizes outwardly. So we feel separated from, you know, our relationships, we feel separated from nature, we feel separated from God, we feel isolated in the separation of trauma. It separates us from our and And one thing that I want to speak to actually around that piece is it separates us from sort of understanding our, like, ourselves as a spiritual being, like in this incarnation, in this cosmic place that we have of the world, and separates us from these sort of understandings of like cosmic principles, like the divine mother, the divine father. What are, you know, what is our relationship to that? What are they? And when we have early childhood trauma with our original caregivers, our mother and our father, or our, like, that maternal caregiver, paternal caregiver, then it really starts to alter our relationship with, you know, this concept or the archetypes of these two polarities of creation, the mother and the father. And then it alters our relationship with our own, like, connection to our masculine, feminine aspects of ourself. So once again, it's a program of separation. It's separating us from this wisdom of these kind of, like, really important aspects of understanding these cosmic principles, these teachings that our ancestors would have passed down to us if colonization, the program of trauma, didn't happen somewhere along the line of our lineage, our paternal and maternal lineages. So that's also a big piece in this sort of, like, idea of trauma as, like, a separating force out there in the world.
Yeah, I definitely think it makes sense. Elisa, do you have a question?
Yeah, this makes me think about, like, do we also sort of choose things, would you say, that keep us from feeling separate from the lineage or from the traumas, out of trauma? So, for example, like we talked about, you know, maybe being afraid of success as an entrepreneur or holding yourself back because it can feel way scarier to be the first person in your lineage who is a successful entrepreneur, or maybe your family value different things. And then you're stepping forward in a different way that's powerful, that's actually no longer giving into the sort of exchanges that happen on family lines. And yeah, I just love to hear you speak to that, because I think so many of us face this, like, fear of success, especially as we're expanding and as we're succeeding. And probably why, like, having people in our corner who have broken through is so essential.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, we have all the, we, again, trauma is on a spectrum and trauma response is on a spectrum, right? So our response to, say, this trauma of constantly being told, you can never do what you actually want to do in life. You have to go get a job, like, go work for the government and get a pension. Like, you know, like, just go work at a gas station is better than, like, you know, trying to make it with this, like, weird thing that you're trying to do. Like, you know, like, we've all heard, like, friends, family, or strangers say these things. And sometimes we will have a trauma response to that. And that would be, like, just trying to keep ourselves safe and being like, okay, yeah, I'm not going to do it, but I will, like, half put my foot in and half out because, you know, my soul is calling for it, but, like, I still have this program of, because they said I couldn't do it. So I don't want to give myself too much permission, because there's a belief that's deep down inside that's saying, like, you can't do it. So you still believe it somewhere, even if it's just 2% part of you, it's in there somewhere. And so I think that, you know, like, with the hypnotherapy work that I do in that process and that I'm doing in the morning with the recording, it's like, yes, like, you're stepping into, you know, like, high value people. You work with high value people who are valuing your work with so much money. You are so abundant and you receive so much value in return for your divine gifts that you're offering into the world. Like, you are such a successful entrepreneur or whatever. So say, you know, like, listeners out there hearing those words, what is that bringing up for you? Is there a piece of you that's like, you know, yes, yes, but oh no, like there's a bit of a resistant conflict. It's like, go to that, give that part of you a place at the table. It's like it's a shadow aspect of you that doesn't believe in who you really or truly are.
I love this so much. And I feel like it really speaks to why, you know, 10 or so years ago, I think a lot of people in the like spiritual wellness space, we were like hardcore, like Law of Attraction and Louise Hay and Wayne Dyer, who I love, and the very like the fullest positive extension of it. And then it feels like now kind of collectively, a lot of us are like, okay, in order to embody that and like kind of fully be in that highest expression, we got some clearing to do, right? And some cleaning, and we need to like kind of bring more of ourselves on board with believing and knowing that that's our truth.
Yeah, like I totally agree. And this is where I feel like light work is shadow work and shadow work is light work. Like when you think about it, Louise L. Hay, Law of Attraction, Wayne Dyer, like there's a lot of light, right? They're like big time light workers. But sometimes when you go so into this positive, the risk is what they call toxic positivity. And, or, you know, it can be like a version of that where it's just like, no, like everything, like I'm love and light, like all is one. Like that's ultimate truth. Like we know that, but we are also living in this human form that comes with a lot of spectrums of darkness and of shades of the various shades of the spectrum of the hues of, you know, what is here for us in this life and in the density of being separate. So we have to oscillate back and forth. As we make our light brighter, guess what? It shines on more of those shadows. And then we have to go to those shadows and tend to them and shine our and offer them our light in a safe little spotlight and be like, hey. And then when we do, then it emancipates that shadow, and then we get to integrate it into our being as wisdom. And so that's why I think it's really cool. And we have this sort of like, we're on this collective journey, right? And so back in the day when Louise L. Hay and Wayne Dyer were big, they were really important steps along the way of our collective evolution of coming home to our true self. And they brought that work forward. And now we're kind of like oscillating a bit into like the shadow work and like, okay, now what do we do with this? And then as we do that, then our light gets brighter. And then as our light gets brighter, there's more shadows. And then it goes like back and forth. And we're just constantly in this expansive process of coming home to the truth of who we are, which is like, you know, ultimately the truth is, you know, we are going to return home to, you know, when we leave this body, there's going to be a moment of merging with, you know, Creator again. And at least that's my belief, right? Maybe that is different for everyone, what you believe or how you want to like articulate that. And then we can come back out and play again in another, you know, way of embodiment form. Our soul is always on this like journey. But for now, here we are. We have shadows and we have light.
I feel like this framing as like shining the light on the shadow and then, you know, giving it a seat at the table, loving it up. Like we've been talking about that a lot. But what we haven't spoken about is something I really want to underline that you just said, is that like when we integrate the shadow, it becomes wisdom. That makes me want to cry, you know, because I feel like in a lot of ways, like I don't avoid shadow work, but I'm not like, oh, great, shadow work. And I think for a lot of us, there is that. But like that, yeah, that just brings such beauty to the process. Like, don't fear the shadow. That's like a lot of where your wisdom might come from. So thank you so much. Thank you so much for sharing that. It's really, yeah, that's really, I want to say like enlightening, you know, not to be a pun, but as a pun, amazing. Yeah. So on this entrepreneurial journey, I think, and I know you both know, and our listeners do too, that shadow shit comes up a lot, right? And so I just love this invitation to let it be a portal to even deeper wisdom that you can share and that you can hold people in even deeper ways. And I feel like through our long time as, you know, first maybe just like serving each other, right? Like sushi and tea, to this place where we really are soul friends, there is Yeah, there are so many lessons, I guess, because it's probably been like 15, almost 20 years now. So many lessons. And I've just seen you really, like, I've seen that wisdom come through as you're integrating the shit you've been through, you know? So I just want to say you're such an inspiration. And yeah, it's so nice to have you on the pod. If you could like leave our listeners with like one big idea, and we'll talk about where to find you and stuff afterwards. But if you could leave our listeners with like one thing that you'd really like them to take with them as they go through the throws and arrows of outrageous fortune of entrepreneurialism, just to help uplift them, just to put you on the spot, what would that be, Ishta?
That's so funny. At the end, you're like, that will uplift them. And I was like, oh, maybe I shouldn't say that.
No. Okay.
Well, but ultimately, it will uplift you. But I would say the biggest power move in your healing journey, and healing, as I say that, it encapsulates you in your journey of becoming that amazing entrepreneur that you're stepping into, right? That's a big part of coming into your true self, expression, alignment, everything in this lifetime. So the biggest power move that you can do on that healing journey is taking an accountability for how you contribute to your own suffering, to your own story of failure, to your own, you know, victimhood of how it just isn't working out for you, or this always happens, or, you know, this person scorned you or betrayed, or, you know, yes, other people play a role, but where were you a frequency match to that? So where was it really your story? Because that story that you're holding in your nervous system as a pattern in your pathways is frequency. It's a pattern of frequency. And so it's going to match things, and it will match maybe somebody that is a dick. Do you know what I mean? But your work isn't to be like, you're a dick. It's to be like, what in me is responsible for, you know, creating this story to repeat, or, you know, so where can you be accountable for your own suffering? And that is the biggest power move in your healing journey that you could possibly do.
Wow.
Thank you. And it's also amazing because it brings us to like something we haven't quite underlined, but also another kind of oscillation, I think, for a while has been into like, you recognize the trauma, you go into it, you feel it, and you have sovereignty or don't need to stay a victim or like be just like perpetually in that state. So I feel like that's just one other like thing to highlight. And what I'm seeing is a sort of positive trend or movement that we're, you know, I think for several years, there was like a lot of trauma mining, and now it's like, okay, yes, trauma mining, and like we don't need to feel like victims to life.
And trauma mining, I say like tread with care, because just to also throw this in at the end, Dawn, if there's a bit of time, it's just, I think it's important, and I learned this lesson myself, and of course I learned it in my training as I became a counselor, that re-triggering the trauma can sometimes not be helpful, right? And I was re-triggering it a lot by mining for it and excavating and going to the story and remembering the things. And so that's why I think, you know, somatic work can be really powerful, because you don't have to go into the specifics of the story. You can just go into the felt sense of your body. And this we can do in hypnotherapy as well, going into the felt sense and then, you know, reframing and tending to those felt senses in the body that are creating blocks or construction or density or heaviness or, you know, chaos or whatever that might be that is disruptive and not in like flow and alignment in the felt sense, that is essentially the trauma in its showing up in the nervous system, in how it feels in the body. So you can go in that way without, and that way can be a lot less triggering than going into the whole story, which is like, yes to that.
Yay. I love it. I feel like there's so much to take away from this episode. Thank you so much for being here. Before I ask Ishta to tell us where to find her. Alisa, is there something more you want to bring forward?
This is so resonant and alive for me right now and us. I think the people in our community and who we're coaching, it shows up in the micro. And it's been really amazing to have this conversation and just start thinking about like the ways we can reframe and like be self-aware of the patterns and also not like so hard on ourselves that they exist and continue in the play. So I just wanted to say thank you for bringing all of this forward. And I'm like, ooh, I need some hypnotherapy.
If you feel like you'd like Ishta to record a meditation or a hypnosis for you, Ishta, where's the best place for people to find you and where they can learn from you and work with you or just be inspired by you? Best places.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, my website is ishtadevi.com, and I am not really on any other social platforms other than Instagram. So you can find me on Instagram, send me a DM and ask me, yeah, how we could work together, how I could serve you best. What are you going through? I'd love to know, you know, from your listeners, like, what do you need right now? Like, what are you working through? What are you wanting to reprogram? What is the, you know, what is your, that future self look like that you want to, and that you are becoming, and you really want to get like on track, like into that timeline to move forward into that highest, most authentic, most aligned expression of you. So I'd love to just hear a DM from anybody about that.
Yay. Thank you so much for being here. I have so many gems I'm taking from this. So appreciate it so much.
Thank you so much for having me. Thanks for initiating this really fun and amazing nerdy conversation.
Our pleasure. And I hope everyone checks out Ishta on Instagram because she's also making beauty and art on there. And I think it's going to be super inspiring for everyone to just see how you play in that space. So
yes, agreed. Next time you come on, Ishta, we have to talk about dance, but we won't start that now. But next time you come on, we have to talk about dance. So thanks so much for listening, everyone. Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of the Softpreneur podcast. If it resonated with your ethos and your soul, we would be so grateful to you if you leave a review wherever you listen to your podcast.
This helps us grow so much, and it also helps more visionary business owners find the show so they can make their dream life their real life. So many blessings and love.